Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pearson. This is City Views. The case of West Valley City's mayor writing under a false name brings a whole host of questions to the fore, including many surrounding journalistic ethics. Joining me this hour, George Pyle is an editorial writer for the Salt Lake Tribune. He joins me in studio. Also with us, Glenn Feary, assistant professor of communication at the University of Utah, who teaches media ethics, and he's joining us by phone. And we invite you to join us, 801-355-3255. Talk. What lessons are you taking from the Winder case, and are you consuming news in a different way? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Again, West Valley City Mayor Mike Winder writing under a pen name in the Deseret News and KSL.com, and the Deseret News was invited numerous times to explain their model of journalism. They declined, and so we proceed. Let's bring in the Winder-Burwash case into the discussion. Mayor Winder sees an opportunity in this new system of citizen journalism. He exploits it. George Pyle, in your column in the Tribune, you note that Winder and his constituents cannot shrug this off as a rookie mistake. Why?
Well, he's an experienced politician. He's an experienced public relations in the public relations business. He knows how this works. This isn't somebody who just woke up one morning and saw something in the paper he didn't like, or noticed that the paper didn't have things that he would like, and decided to take steps. Now, his beef, which a lot of people think is legitimate, is his that was the origin of all of this, was that the Deseret News stopped covering his city, except for crime news. And as a newspaper man, I can see how you could fall into that trap. Crime news is relatively easy. I mean, I've never covered cops here. I've covered them in other towns. And you go and you talk to the police, and they have a thing set up to do it. And sometimes it can be the hardest job in journalism because of the things you have to see and the things you have to deal with. But you don't have to sit through hour upon hour of meetings. And so I can see how, as the D-News cut back on their coverage, they stuck with the crime coverage, which is relatively simple, and did away with the sitting through hours of planning commission meetings and city council meetings. And so the mayor felt that every time there was a West Valley City Dateline in the D-News, it was a crime story, and they didn't do the other stuff. So he said, okay, well, they've got this avenue. I'll do the other stuff. And that was what they sort of hoped would happen. They just hoped it would be done by people who didn't hold public office and were using their real names.
And is that the difference, that he's an elected official?
Well, it should be using your real name anyway, but the fact is that the mayor was writing stories about the city he was mayor of, and we didn't know that that was the mayor. And is being represented as something that's being presented by somebody who's not disinterested, but unbiased, is not a public official, is not in a position to want to spin the news in a way that makes the government of that city at that time look good. Now, there have been homers among press for years. I had a tendency to fall into that. You cover one mayor, one city council, one police chief for a long time. You grow to trust them, and you write about them. And sometimes newspapers will just say, okay, today everybody's got a new beat. You switch with you, and you switch with her, and you change because you try and get away from that idea of you're too comfortable with your sources, what they call writing for your sources instead of writing for the public. It happens. In this case, that's all it was, and the readers didn't know, and even the editors didn't know.
Let's get our listeners in on this conversation. Brinton is calling from Salt Lake City, and Brinton, hi. Are you there, Brinton? Okay, guess not. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. I want to get back to this question of anonymity, though, because, okay, we didn't know that it was Mayor Mike Winder. But the online forums, they're dominated by people who don't want to disclose who they really are. They use pseudonyms all the time. How is this case different from, say, a politician who assigns a staffer to write a guest editorial about X? I mean, how is this fundamentally different? Glenn Feary.
I think what's different about this situation is the expectations. If it wasn't labeled opinion, or if it wasn't labeled analysis, or if indeed we didn't know who was actually writing, then that obscured the purpose of these articles. So clearly, I think for Mayor Winder, the purpose of these articles was to show West Valley City in a positive light, or to show what he thought was the rest of the story. But the public didn't know that. All the public thought was, well, this is coming to me under a news brand. This must be an impartially, more or less balanced and vetted view of things and events that are happening in West Valley. So I think that was the gap between expectation and what was being delivered and why, versus, oh, here's something that's clearly labeled opinion. I know who's writing. He or she has a point of view and wants to persuade me or, you know, show me something from a perspective.
Okay, so it's that transparency, one of the core values of journalism. George Pyle?
Yeah, and also, I mean, you try and compare this to, like, most newspapers, the Tribune and most other newspapers. Now, they have comments at the end of a story, and anybody who reads the story online can go on and with differing levels of screening before you get on, but you can still use...
They can comment with impunity sometimes.
They can comment pretty much with impunity. Now, there are ways that you screen. Some newspapers require you to register. Some newspapers require that even if it's your pen name that goes online, that the newspaper knows who you are. Others don't. Others go through and screen these things. Some screen them ahead of time. They only they look at you post a comment. Somebody at the newspaper reads it. They decide whether it's okay. It goes up. Other newspapers, it goes up immediately. And then maybe if someone complains that it's somehow racist or commercial or inappropriate, they can take it down. But again, that's people see what that for what it is. It's a whole lot of people who jump on under false names. Funny pseudonyms. They put little ID pictures that aren't of them. They're of Captain Jack Sparrow or of a cartoon character or something. So everybody understands this is just kind of fun and games. And you don't really care who it is. And again, at best, it's an idea that you ordinarily wouldn't have seen because the old way of doing it wasn't available. And does the idea stand or fall on its own? You don't care where it came from. Does it make sense? Is it a good argument? Is it something that was left out of the story that ought to have been brought up? And that's fair game. I personally am really uncomfortable with a lot of this anonymity because it leads people to say some really cruel things sometimes. And it was more of a, I worked in Buffalo, New York for a while, and it was a real problem there because there was a lot of racial division in that community. Mm. And just about every time there was a crime story, there'd be 50 comments that were just horribly racist, and after a while they just completely discontinued that. They took it completely down for months, and then they brought it back up where everybody posts under their honest to God real name that they've confirmed is your real name, and it's people still comment, but they don't say these hateful things anymore, and the news is happy to be rid of that.
But the online environment really is quite difficult to police, Glenn Fury, isn't it? It presents some unique challenges, I think, to newsrooms, to editorial boards, etc.
Yes, it does, if only in terms of volume. As George is pointing out, that sometimes these comments can almost overwhelm the story itself. And I want to remind, too, that your listeners, I think it was KSL.com, that for a while, I think they suspended or they changed their policies for comments because they didn't feel that some of the comments were reinforcing the overall values that they thought were important, one of which was civility. And that's too bad because one of the advantages that new media or social media offer us is that they promise an unfiltered and authentic view of things. That's the ideal, right? In this case, unfortunately, sometimes these comments break down into just mudslinging or all the things that we were hearing about before. But overall, what we're getting at here is that isn't it ironic that in an age when we should, have every reason to expect maximum transparency, whether it's among public communicators who do this professionally for a living or people who comment on that, it seems all too easy to do just the opposite, to obscure your identity and to just go out, online and flame people.
Mm. Glenn Fury, Assistant Professor of Communication at the University of Utah, also with us, editorial writer for the Salt Lake Tribune, George Pyle, and we invite you to join us. We're talking about journalistic ethics in the Internet age. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. So how is the online environment affecting ethical rules right now? Where are those ethical lines that have been outlined in the society for professional journalists? Have they changed at all because of this new media environment? Glenn Fury?
you know, one of the things that the Society of Professional Journalists has done in the past couple of years has raised the issue of, listen, we've got this great code of ethics. It's been in existence for decades. The SPJ code, the Society of Professional Journalists code, was last revised, I think, in 1996. And some people have raised that very question. Well, if we've got new tools, don't we need new standards? The counterargument to that, and personally I agree with the counterargument, is these are general principles. They apply no matter what medium or what technology we're using. And I think in the context of what we're talking about today, one of the four key points of the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics is that journalists should act independently. And the code reads that journalists should be free of obligation to any interest other than the public's right to know. And more important, I think, to this discussion, the code goes on to say that journalists should avoid conflicts of interest, real or perceived. So to me, this brings us back to some basic core values that, look, it doesn't matter if I'm, you know, doing a live broadcast or if I'm writing something for a print newspaper or wherever. You know, my dedication to public service, informing the public, being an independent voice, these are the things that aren't going to change no matter how much the technology changes.
Mm. George Pyle, take us into the Salt Lake Tribune editorial room. And what are the discussions like there when it comes to talking about online media, anonymity, transparency, the issues we've been talking about today?
On the editorial board, we are still doing what we've always done. And it really, it's kind of the rest of the world is catching up to us in a way, because we've always had the professional journalists, the editorial writers. We've had what now might be called aggregation, which has always been there. It's the syndicated columnists that run in newspapers across the country. And we pick the ones that we think our readers would be interested in, and we share them with that. And then the comments, which are the letters to the editor, or the locally written op-eds by people who only do it once in a while, or maybe once in their whole lives because they have something to say. And so the three prongs that are on the internet have been on the editorial pages for 100 years. The main difference is that everybody uses their right name, as best we can determine, and that there's often a little tag at the end of especially an op-ed or even a letter to the editor that will say the writer is the chairman of this or the mayor of that or the publication or the publicity officer for this organization. So the reader knows the filter that this person is coming through. They have a right to the access to that, to the public forum, and the reader likewise has a right to know where this person is coming from. With the anonymity that the internet provides, and initially it was like, well, we reserve the space for people who sign their names because we have very limited space, so we'll hold to that standard. On the internet, space is no issue, it's infinite, so shoot, let's just let all comers have anything they want. And that was the idea initially. There are professional journalists now who have determined this is the biggest mistake that has been made in journalism in the past half century. I sympathize with that argument. It does let people who were voiceless before have a voice. The problem is that there are an awful lot of other people out there who don't care to hear these voices because in a lot of cases they're misinformed, they're prejudiced, they're nasty. And if they wouldn't say that under their right name, if they only say it from behind a pseudonym, do you really want to hear it?
Hmm. Let's get back to the Mike Winder episode. So the mayor's writings appeared in the Deseret News. Again, the Deseret News was invited to be part of this discussion today. The Deseret News reported last month that its circulation numbers are up. The DeseretNews.com has the largest audience of any newspaper in Utah, that their print circulation has jumped more than 24%. So is this Deseret Connect model working, do you think? Glenn Feary?
Well, part of the answer, I think, is a question of what does this news source stand for? So let's talk about two newspapers. And by the way, you know, Salt Lake City is incredibly lucky in that we still have two daily newspapers, which is extremely rare in the United States today in the 21st century. But the question I'm getting at here is a daily newspaper a general news source? Does it serve everybody? Does it inform the whole public? Or is it more like a niche publication? Does it say, well, here's our audience, and we're really tightly focused just on one group? And I think that's part of the kind of process of self-definition that the Deseret Media companies are all involved in right now. Honestly, my perception is that they've decided, you know what, it makes business sense for us, and it's resonant with our own values to focus more on a core group. And by this, they're not saying only people who are members of the LDS Church. It's not just for Mormons. That's what, you know, I've heard people say, that it's people who agree, you know, broadly with certain values that we articulate, whether it's faith, family, charity, things that they've listed on their website and talked about publicly. So, but this question of, you know, do you serve the general public or do you serve a niche audience, I think that goes to the core of sort of what we're talking about. Well, what's your brand? What do you stand for? Do you feel that, you know, you have to be a newspaper of record? See, that's a great 20th century idea, isn't it, right? That you can open up a newspaper and say, my gosh, this is what happened in my community in the past 24 hours or something. Or instead, you know, doing that general model, do you do something more focused?
We only have a couple minutes left, but I want to get to the Winder Burwash episode. What has this case done to the credibility of all of us journalists, if you can put it that way? Maybe just in a minute, George Pyle.
Well, I think it hurts the credibility of all journalism because people who are consumers are often fairly passive, although it's changing a little bit, and they kind of put us all in the broad brush. I mean, intelligent people have a hard time telling the difference between news and editorial, between news and advertising. They have a hard time telling the difference between niche publications and mainstream. We all get tarred by this.
Glenn Fury.
I think, once again, it's an opportunity for journalists to remind the public of the values that they bring to their work, whether it's independence or minimizing harm or seeking truth and reporting it or being accountable. That, you know, journalists do, you know, try very hard to be accurate, to gather information, to vet it, to present it to the public in a way that's balanced and informative. And so, once again, I think, you know, these very old questions are totally pertinent today as we face these new challenges.
And George, very quickly, what are the lessons for politicians and others who may want to take up a pen name?
Yeah, don't. Don't. That's the lesson. Don't do it.
Glenn Fury?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, once again, I think everybody who's out there in the public arena, and that's almost all of us now, has to understand that they're going to be held to standards of transparency that are almost absolute.
Glenn Fury is Assistant Professor of Communication at the University of Utah. Glenn, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Also, George Pyle, editorial writer for the Salt Lake Tribune, and thanks to you.
Thanks very much.
City Views is a production of KCPW News. Jesse Ellis is our technical director. Ryan Cron composed our theme music. And you, of course, can continue the discussion online at kcpw.org or check us out on Facebook or on Twitter. Next time, war stories from two of Utah's finest columnists. The Salt Lake Tribune's Paul Raleigh and Joanne Jacobson-Wells reminisce about some of their more memorable columns. You can tune in for that discussion tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. We'll be right back.